We're Perek Zayin. We are middle of the fourth animal. In fact, let's go back one pasuk to pasuk Zayin. Okay, let's go back to pasuk Zayin just to review, because it's really the pasuk. Yeah, Perek Zayin, pasuk Zayin. We really did Perek. We did pasuk Zayin yesterday, but being that pasuk Ches is a continuation, it's good to review from here. So at this point, we are discussing the dream of Daniel. This dream was revealed to him when he was, as the pasuk says, in the first year of Belshazzar, during the reign of the Malchus of Bavel. Belshazzar, as we remember, was the third king of Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, Evel, Merodach, and Belshazzar. At this point in time, he had this dream. This dream reveals to him the four Malchios. The Mefarshim comment that the Dalet Malchios was shown to Daniel from different perspectives. Here, it's being shown to him from his perspective. It's a dream shown to him, as we're learning here, the four different creatures, the lion, the bear, and now the first was the lion, the second was
the bear,
and the third was the leopard, and now the fourth, which there is no actual description in the pasuk itself, which we will discuss in a few moments, but it's been shown to him. Hashem is showing him what the Dal Malchios will look like relating to Daniel. We learned back in Perek, the previous prok, not Perek Vav, towards the beginning of Sefer Daniel, when the Dal Malchios was shown to Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel was asked to interpret the Mareh, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar, to understand, to see the Dal Malchios from his perspective. So it's very interesting. Everyone has a different perspective in history. Like today, there are no two history books that are the same. History, the way you record history, is all a matter of interpretation. It's impossible to record just the bare facts. Every time you make an attempt to record history, you're always, inevitably, adding in some perush into why things happen, and it's your twist, your look at what happened during a period of time. I mean, this is a fact. And that's why the only way you can really get a true sense of what happened is to looking at an event through the perspective of many different people. And so that's something that's very interesting. I mean, that's
a scientific way.
I don't know. But every record of an event that happens is always subject to the interpretation of the one that presents it. And Michal Miller has a sefer where he presents 60 different themes on the Dal Malchios, and each one of those themes is a different perspective describing the same event. But from each perspective, it's completely different. It has a whole different look, a whole different meaning, and it's giving us a different message and a different flavor. Here in this sefer, we're going to have another vision in Perek Ches again, but in this vision, there's a major contrast in how the Goyim look at the Dal Malchios and how they view them as subjugating Klal Yisrael, and how we, as the victims, or the one that suffers the Dal Malchios, how we look at the Dal Malchios. And it's very interesting. This is the extreme comparison. And in the whole middle sefer, there are 60 themes. Most of those themes are
within it,
but you're looking at it pretty much, I guess, from our perspective, Ruba de Ruba. 95% we're looking at the Dal Malchios. Here we are. We are Klal Yisrael. We are serving Hashem. We have a role to bring Mashiach and to make Hashem's name known throughout the entire world. And we suffer. We look at the Dal Malchios, different angles, different perspectives. But this is the ultimate contrast. The way the Goyim look at it and the way we look at it. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When I Googled War Empires a long time ago to see what was online, it's mostly from the Christians. They really know more about, they're more interested in this generally than we are. And they try to figure out where they fit in.
Uh-huh.
You know, and if anybody but them.
They don't want to be the bad guys,
right?
Because all of the predictions are doom and gloom. Gloom and doom. They're going to be perish. They're going to come to an end, and if they're going to... They don't want to. Okay, so that's. So now, so that's a very. I think it's a very important point to mention that here in Perek Zion, we're looking back at the same event from a completely different focus, from our perspective, not from the perspective of the nations of the world, from the Nebuchadnezzar looking at us. So we learned yesterday, Bosar Dino, after seeing the first three creatures, the lion with the eagle wings, the bear, which also is called a dave, a wolf, and the leopard, which had in its mouth three ribs, which represented that the leopard was Yavon. Now we come to the fourth creature that is not described as a specific animal, Basar Dinocha Zehaves Bechezve Lelia, in the vision of a dream. As we mentioned yesterday, since over here it says these two words once again, Bechezve Lelia, this was a new dream. This was to be continued type of dream, a very unique concept where the Mara was broken up over two separate dreams, and the second dream continued where the first dream left off. Va'aru, and behold, Cheva Rivi'a, a fourth creature. By the way, another point before we go further, that we have over here in this parak numerous krivich sifs, and the difference between every krivich siv is lashon zachar and lashon ikeva. That the way it's spelled is always Zohar, and the way we read it is always Nekeva. So what is the significance of Zohar and Nekeva? We know that the Zohar is the Noisein, and the Nekeva is the Mekabel. So it's a Moshal and a Nimshal. Daniel is seeing the Lashon Zohar. He's seeing the way that it's interpreted is that being that the Kri, the Ksif, the way it's spelled is always Lashon Zohar, he's actually seeing it in the masculine form. But when he is recording it, and when he is relaying it to us, and we are reading it, we are reviewing it, we look at it as Mekablan, in the feminine form. Daniel is the Noisein, or the dream is something which goes forth. It's a mashal, and we have to adapt, we have to accept it. A mekeva is a makabal, we have to accept it, adapt it, and make sense out of it in our own way. Yeah.
Maybe it means that they seem powerful, the masculine,
but really, it's,
really,
they're really very weak. Okay, that's an interesting idea. He's saying here that the masculine is powerful, feminine was weak, so it seems, don't get so scared. It seems very scary, but we can deal with it. We have an ability to accomplish it and work with it. Based upon what you said, one of your themes is the dreidel. Okay, we're coming soon, it's coming Chanukah, and we have Nes Gadol HaYasham. So I don't know all the details, after Rav Michal will comment, or maybe he'll tell us the details, but some of the commentaries explain that the four different letters on the dreidel, Nes Gadol HaYasham, correspond to the Dalid Malchios. What's the significance? It's a beautiful idea. Dal Nachas. The dreidel, when you spin the dreidel, everyone is anticipating when the dreidel will fall. Take the dreidel. There are four sides. Each of the four sides has a different letter, corresponds to Dal Nachas. You spin, but very, very soon it stops and it collapses.
Or the letters themselves.
What? The whole. What? The letters.
The letters, yes.
You want to comment?
The letters.
What?
Nes Gadol
HaYasham, or Nes Gadol HaYapol, yeah? What?
Aspects of humanity, the Nefesh, the Gruf, the Seichel, and Hakol.
Yeah.
In combination of all of them. So Nefesh, and there are proofs of this. Nefesh is the Nun, Gruf is the Gimel, Seichel is the Shin, and Hakol is the hay, and each one, they stand for Bavel, Koras, Yovan, and Edom. Edom
is Hakol. Encompasses everything. Right,
about,
over right here. Because there is such an interpretation where the four letters correspond to Dal Malchus, but the Drus, why? Because the dreidel doesn't last very long. It only spins for a certain amount of time, and when that force ends, it collapses. And it's a mashal for us, although we are in Galus, the Galus will one day come to an end. All four Malchios will eventually end. We mentioned this in the past, even though today we live in Galus Edom, according to many of the commentators, it doesn't mean we're only in Edom. Edom, each of the Dal Malchios builds upon the previous Galus. Edom has within it, subsumes within it, Bavel, Parasamadai, Yavon. So really today we are, all four of the Golios are with us. But we spin it, and it will come to an end, it will collapse. This is an adrush that I saw mentioned in one of these farms explaining, discussing Dal Malchus. But coming back over to what it says, we have over here the fourth creature, Ba'avaru, and behold, Cheva, Revi'a, a fourth creature. Again, this idea, Lashon Zachar, Lashon Nekeva, everything is written, every single one of the ksivs is Zachar, and the way we always read it is Nekeva, we get two ideas, is that it's Zohar is a nice saying, the cave is in the Kabel, and therefore we have to accept what it says and interpret it in our own way. And the other idea that Rav Michal said is the Zohar is strong, the cave is weak, that although it appears to be very strong and scary and frightening, but it's not as frightening as it sounds. The bark is stronger than the bite, so you know that's another idea. So he saw this creature and the chila ve'em sane v'sakifa yatira. Three different expressions. It was the chila ve'em sane v'sakifa yatira. Three things which mean basically the same thing as far as we are concerned. Different expressions of fear and terror. Yatira means in abundance, more so than the ordinary, and it does not say the name of the animal, unlike the previous three examples of the lion with the eagle wings and the bear, which also refers to the wolf, and the third creature, the leopard. Here there is no description of the animal. The Medrash says the reason why the animal was a pig, a chazir. And the reason why the Pasuk did not actually say chazir is because it's a disgusting animal, and we don't want to mention chazir. Why a chazir? So this is very frightening when it says chazir, because a chazir is the animal which makes believe it's kosher. It has a sign of a kosher animal is split hooves, and it chews its cud. The split hooves are obvious. That's something which is external. Chewing its cud is the stomach. It regurgitates its food. That is something which cannot be seen. It's hidden. It's within. A chazir is mafreses parsa. It has split hooves, but it does not regurgitate its food. So it presents itself as being kosher. It tells the world, look, I'm kosher. I have split hooves. I'm a wonderful creature. I'm just as kosher as all the other animals. But secretly, inside, it does not regurgitate its food. That's why it's a non-kosher animal. That is the nature, according to the Medrash, it's not a Jewish, it's a Medrash, of the Malchus of Edom. Edom presents itself to be a civilized, a righteous nation that does chesed, but in truth, everything that it's doing behind the scenes is all for its own benefit, for corruption. Let me read you the words of the Medrash. I'm reading from a Medrash Lekach Tov. Medrash Lekach Tov in Bereishis, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. That's where it's taken from. Ra Daniel v'lo hiskir shema. Daniel saw a creature and did not mention it by name. Why? V'hi mishanyim in kol cheva. So all it says here in this pasuk, this creature is different than the other three creatures. V'hu demos, according to the Medrash, chazir, of a pig. U'lefisho mishukot, since the chazir is a disgusting animal, lo zochar shema. Daniel would not want to be moitzei dibara, does not want to say a bad word. He did not want to say its word, the word chazir. In the pasuk, we have in the Gemara, when it refers to a chazir, it calls it a dovar acher. A dovar acher. The Gemara also does not want to mention the chazir by name. The who, according to this medish, which fits very well with Rashi, and most of the Rishonim that take this medish, is that the fourth nation is Edom. Not like we learned yesterday, according to the Ibn Ezra, which the Mitzudas very interestingly follows, and that Das Yochid, as Rav Michal said, the Ibn Ezra is a Das Yochid. The Ramban rips him apart. Ramban is very, very strong to show that the Ibn Ezra is incorrect or is not the accepted opinion, but the Ibn Ezra does say that it refers to the fourth Mal Golas is Yishmael, but here this Medrash clearly says what Rashi is basing his interpretation on, and most of the Midrashim say exactly this. V'hu Malchus Edom Shenim Shelo Kachazir, like it says in Tehillim, Yichar Semen Chazir Miyar, that the Chazir will come forth from the forest. The Lama, what? You know, it's not, I'm reading from you from a Medrash, you do not have do not have in front of you what I'm saying. V'lama nim shemalchus edom lechazir, because of redistribution. That's what it says. Because Elamachazir Mifaseya Telofov Bishas Shuhu Ravates, it lifts up its hoofs when it lies down, Kalimar, Ru'u Shuhu Tohar, Kimafris Parsu, because I have split hooves. But Vakol, but everyone really knows who Aimrev, Akol Aimrev, who Gerolo, Yigar, Tomehu. Yeah, we know very well that you have split hooves, but you are not Mafre, you're not Malas Gera, you do not regurgitate your food, and therefore you are not kosher. Now, what's the Nimshol? Koch Malchus Edom Horoshah, Goizeles. It takes away the money from other people, v'chosenes, and another expression of theft, u'mifazeres me'oisecha, and redistributes the money. You can say it's a communism. I don't know what it is. Okay, it's not for us to judge. Kolaymar ke'amerish u'oisech chasad. I'm reading what it says. It's a pillar what it says, and it does chesed. The government says we are a nation that does chesed, but the truth is chesed leumim chata. Such a type of chesed is really a sin. When you steal from people who work hard and you give it to people who are not interested in working hard for no other reason, when they have the opportunity to work hard, that is not called chesed, that is called chatas, and therefore the nation of Edom is compared to a chazir. It's a very interesting idea. Okay, I'll just tell you that, what? Bereshis Chavav Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Now, being that we're learning this, so this just reminded 2 days ago in Daf Yomi, there was a beautiful idea from Rav Moshe Feinstein, which I think fits perfectly into this idea of comparing of the Chazir and this Medrash, and why Daniel did not want to say the word Chazir. The Gemara talks about the famous story of Rashbi. There were three Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rashbi, Shimba Yechoi. They were sitting together and they were discussing, they were talking about the government. And Rabbi Yehuda said, the government is a wonderful government. They do very good, they do chesed. They build bridges, they build markets, they have established great, they have accomplished great things. Rabbi Yehuda was very, gave high grades, great praise to the government. Rabbi Yossi was silent. Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Yochai said, everything they do is for themselves. Don't give them any credit. They're not doing it because they want to be good to society. They want to be good to the world. Everyone has their own agenda, their own angle, and they don't deserve praise. You have to be yer l'sev daitam, l'sev davar, l'sev daitam. So the government found out there was a person that was present. His name was Yehuda ben Gerim. Rashi says both his mother and father were Gerim. And he heard what these three Tanoim said. And this person went to the government. And he reported what Rabbi Yehuda said, Rabbi Yossi did. He was solid, and what Rashbi said. The government said, Rabbi Yehuda, who gave praise to the government, should be rewarded. We are going to give him the title of the Rosh HaMedabrim B'chol Makom. At any event where there is a Jew who speaks, he will be the one to give the invocation. He will be the Rosh HaMedabrim B'chol Makom. Rabbi Yossi, who did not give praise to the government, was silent. He shall be exiled. We will not harm him physically, but he has to leave the country. We will deport him. And Rashbi, who had the chutzpah to say something negative about our wonderful country, about Rome, has to be killed. And Rashbi in the cave for 12 years, an additional year, 13 years, and we have the whole story of Rav Shimon Yochai, the story of Lag BaOmer, period. Rav Moshe Feinstein asks a very simple question. The Gemara Masechta Avodah Zarah on Daf Gimel, I think it's Daf Gimel Amud Aleph or Gimel Amud Beis, says that La'asid Lavo, famous Gemara, the nations of the world will come and demand reward in the time of Mashiach, and they will say to the Melech HaMashiach and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we gave the world, we enabled the Jewish people to serve you. We built bridges, we established markets, we built bathhouses, we established an economic structure for the world, and the Jewish people derived great benefit. In fact, they exploited the system more than anyone else, and they were the ultimate beneficiaries of what we have created. They're the ones that enjoy everything, so we deserve credit. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the nations of the world, everything that you have done was for your own benefit. It's true, the Jewish people derive benefit. They may have received more than anyone else, that's debatable, but you did not do it l'shem shamayim. So if Moshe Feinstein asks, if that's the case, this no one disagrees with this. This is there's no chiluk deos in this piece of Gemara. This is what the answer will be, and they will be denied. They will be denied reward. Then the Gemara goes further. They're going to say, okay, so give us a new opportunity, give us a new chance. Hashem will give them the midst of sukkah. They'll go into the sukkah. Hashem will bring out, take the sin out of its sheath, and it'll get hot. They'll kick the sukkah, and then they'll forfeit everything. The Gemara there does say that Hashem will deny them reward because everything they have done was only for their own benefit. So why then did Rabbi Yehuda, what's them shot in the Gemara in Shabbos, Staf Lamed Gimel, where Rashbi and where Rabbi Yehuda gave praise to the government? The Gemara makes it very clear in Avodah Zarah that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was correct. Everything that the Goyim do is for their own benefit. So why then did Rabbi Yehuda praise the nations of the world for their accomplishments, for their contribution? And why was Rabbi Yossi silent? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi should have agreed with Rashbi because of the Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah where Hashem himself says that Rashbi is correct. So Rabbi Moshe says a fascinating answer. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah is the MS, but that's only for Hashem to say. A human being today doesn't have the right to tell another human being, even a Jew, to say to a guy that everything that you did was for your own benefit. A human being does not know what someone someone else is thinking. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Goyim, the nations of the world, have built bridges, have established markets, set up an economic system, have given us great benefit, Rabbi Yehuda, we have a duty to be makir toif to them for what they have done for us. It's none of our business to say, yeah, but you, in the back of your mind, deep down, you never really wanted to give to be mahana us. You did it all for your own benefit. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is a yachid. He is a das yachid. He's on the madrega that we're not shaykh to the Zohar. He was the mechaber, the Zohar, Sodos. He's into mystical things. He goes down the sevdaita shaladam, deep down, what people are thinking. But Rashbi is not halacha lemais. Rashbi is Zohar, Sodos HaTorah. This is from Mashiach Elam Haba. In this world, a world of Nigla, it's a matter of bottom line. Bottom line. Do we derive benefit from the Goyim? We do. Do we have an obligation to be makir toiv to someone that gives us benefit? Yes, we do. And that was the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda gave high praise to the Goyim for what they have done. Yeah.
Could it be the Rabbi Yehuda close to who's living under an authoritarian regime?
Yeah.
He understood that obviously
his life was threatened. So I don't think the Gemara.
If you have three gedolim and they're all criticizing, you know the Romans, and they did according to Rav Shimon.
Shav, I hear what you're saying. You're saying, and I give you over the Rav Moshe seems to say that the Gemara is telling us that Rabbi Yehuda held this is the correct approach in life. It's not just because he felt threatened that if he would say a bad word, they would come and kill him. What you're saying makes sense, but the fact that the Gemara is recording this on a Daf Gemara, here Masechta Shabbos Daf Lamed is making a big issue out of it. It's Rav Moshe holds it's telling us a lesson. It's even if life was not threatened. Put that aside. They didn't think, it appears from the Gemara, they never thought that this conversation would be reported back to the government and they would get in trouble.
The fourth guy told them.
Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerib, he went and he was malshim. They didn't expect.
How you killed him later.
Later on, he put Nosav Ba'inov Nasa Gal Shalat Samos. But the fact that the Gemara records this, Rav Moshe learns that this is a mahalich in life. They have given us benefit, and therefore we have a duty to be makir toiv to the government. What? No, not even Shalom Alchus. Forget about Shalom Alchus. That's Shalom Alchus is only when we're only like a b'diavad. He holds that this is a shita in life. A person is mahana you. A person gives, does for you good. It's none of your business to make cheshbonos. I'm not going to be makir toiv because I know that his cheshbon was only because he wants to get this and this and this and this and this. Bottom line, was he good to you? Yes. Did you do? You have to say thank you. You have to appreciate what he's done for you.
Okay, you criticize. According to Moshe's explanation,
yeah,
criticize the government for things that you think are negative.
Absolutely, that's part of God. That's part of society. That's how society is set up. That's democracy. If you don't like what your leaders are doing, you can vote them out. That's all part of the way the government has been established. Depending which country you live in, of course, you have to be careful what you say in certain countries. But Rav Moshe concludes the Gemara doesn't tell us who the halacha is like. Who's correct? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, or Rashbi? But Elu ve'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, and there's definitely something to be taken from Rabbi Yehuda. Rashbi's approach is MS, as the Gemara Masechta Avodah Zarah makes it clear, but it's not for us. It's not for a person. That's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yodea Machashav Shel Adam. Hashem has his cheshbonus. Hashem will not give them reward because he holds that what they have done was not done l'shem Shemaim. But we're not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have an obligation to follow in the way of Rabbi Yehuda and to thank a person who gives does for us good, even though it may very well be that their intentions were not the very best.
I just want to go back to where we were before. You know, the statement that the Hazir sticks out of his foot and says, "Look at me, I'm kosher," that is a very, very well-known statement in the Medrash. But and even the Medrash that you just quoted from, it doesn't take it from Sefer Vayikra, it takes it from Sefer Bereishis.
Correct.
And what's going on there? Why does everybody know it? Because it's in Rashi and Chumash in Sefer Bereishis, where Esav goes at age 40 and gets married. And why did he wait until he was 40? Because he wanted to look like a big tzaddik, and when obviously he was anything but. So the whole idea of the Hazir is it's a metaphor for hypocrisy, but appearance rather than substance, right? And that goes to Rome, and that goes to the church, and so on and so forth. That's the idea.
Hypocrisy. The hypocrisy, exactly, right. So that it says what the hypocrisy is in one form.
Love and peace. And,
right. That's one. The Medrash is focusing on a very specific form of hypocrisy, that we do chesed, but the truth is he's only doing the chesed because you want. And that's the MS, and that's what the Neil over here is saying, but we have to remember, even though that may be the MS, it does not give us the right, necessarily, to act upon that MS. That's MS for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In our world, we have to behave civilly and have respect for people that do for us good. Okay, so again, this creature over here is the Chazir. It's not mentioned. It's also interesting to know that a Chazir is a domesticated animal. There's much discussion in the commentators about the difference between the vision that we're going to see here in Perek Zion and the vision we're going to see in Perek Ches. Perek Ches, we're going to have another vision, another dream that Daniel had, where again he sees Dal Malchus. But there the animals are domesticated animals. Here in this vision, Perek Zion, three of the four animals are chayos, are wild. Even among the domesticated, not everything is kosher, but even among the chazir is a domesticated animal. Chazir is not a wild animal.
The
forest.
A wild.
It's a wild. Okay, made a mistake. Okay. So there is a chayek. Okay, you have to be ma'ayin into this more detail. But one of the major differences between this vision that Daniel had and the vision we're going to have in Perek Ches is what kind of animals are we dealing with? Are we dealing with wild animals or are we dealing with domesticated animals? I'll just give you a little drush to elaborate upon this. Last week's parasha, Yitzchak was offered as a carbon. The akedas Yitzchak. Suddenly the Malach comes. Al tishlach yodcha el hanavi al taslam uuma ki ato yodati ki rei lekematav lechasak tzvinuch asichitcha mineni. Vayisena vayar vihinei ayil. Now it's very interesting. Nothing is a coincidence in the Torah that there are two creatures in the Torah that have exactly the same letters. Aleph, Yud, Lamed. There is the Ayil with a Chirik and the Ayol. The Ayil is a domesticated animal. It is a goat that is a mature. There is an Aes. When the Aes becomes an adult, it turns into an Ayil, to a ram. Then there is the Ayol. Ayol is, I don't know exactly what it is, the gazelle, the hart, it's something similar, I don't think we really know. Right, it's something like a tzvi, it's always It's always associated with the tzvi. What is the tzvi? We also don't exactly know the deer. It's not exactly clear what a tzvi. We translate it as a deer. We translate a nesher as an eagle. All of these things are very, very big question marks. What they really are, they're in the family, but the details, the specifics, have yet to be known for sure. But there is an ayil and an ayol. How could it be that in the Torah throws around? Torah is the ultimate of precision. There's nothing more precise than the Torah. How can it be the Torah has two words for two completely different creatures? One is the Ayil and one is the Ayol. So that's a concept. So the answer, it has to be, you cannot say otherwise, is that if the two creatures have the same exact letters, there is a relationship between the two. One is the wild version, and one is the domesticated version. And so there's a Jewish. The Jewish says that until the time of the Akedah, this is the avoda of Avraham Avinu was to serve the world. His avoda was v'es hanefesh asher osu b'choran, to go out to the world and teach the world monotheism. There's a Ribbono Shel Olam. There's a Creator. After the Akedah, everything changed. Ki b'Yitzchak yikor l'cho zara, the avoda was to focus on Klal Yisrael, focus on your bias, on your home. Until the Akedah, Avraham was kaviyachol the ayol. And by the way, the Medrash says that from all of the chayos of the field, the most pious is the ayol. There's a Medrash that says that when there's a drought, all of the creatures come to the ayol, the gazelle, and they tell the ayol, we have a tzara, there's no water. And the ayol buries its horns into the ground, cries out, it's mispalo to Hashem, and the tehoim rises, and then it begins to rain. It's the chasida of all of the chayos. Now, it doesn't say this anywhere. This is a drush. It doesn't say this anywhere, but if the ayol is the most pious of all of the wild animals, and there's another creature in the Torah that has exactly the same letters, called an ayil, and that's a domesticated animal, which is offered as a carbon, ayil echad. You have many times, you have the carbonus of an ayil. It has to be that there is some relationship between the two. And this is the defining, the change, the shift between Avraham's avoda before the Akedah and his avoda after the Akedah. Before the Akedah, he was there to serve the world, to teach the world about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That has now been accomplished to the degree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees necessary for the world. Now Hashem says to Avraham, I want you to focus on Yitzchak, on building in your own bias perfection. Ki bi Yitzchak yikaru l'cho zara, the Akedah is complete. Now v'hinei ayil, not an ayol. No more is it going to be the avoda of the ayol. V'hinei ayil. Now we're transferring to the ayil, the domesticated. So the point I want to make is, you see over here is such a relationship between the wild and the domesticated. The wild represents the world. The domesticated represents internal. When we focus on the Dalet Malchios, it represents Golos. Klal Yisrael is in Golos. When Klal Yisrael is in Golos, that has an effect on the world. It's not just we're in Golos. Chazal tells us that if the nations of the world knew how much benefit, how much bracha the world received when it was the Beis HaMikdash, every nation would send its best army to surround the Beis HaMikdash to protect it, that it should not be destroyed. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, an incredible yirida came down to the world. Poverty and suffering, quality of life dramatically was diminished with the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Goyim don't appreciate what they had when there was a Beis HaMikdash, when Klal Yisrael was serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when we are in Golos, we soften the Dal Malchios, Bavel, Parasamada, Yavan, Edom, it's not just us who suffer. The whole world suffers. But we also suffer. We also suffer in our own way. When this vision, Perek Zayin, compares the Dal Malchios to four wild animals, we're looking at Dalet the Golos from our perspective. That's number one, because this is a dream that has appeared to Daniel. This is not a dream that appeared to Nebuchadnezzar or Belshazzar or Dayavish. This is a Jewish. This is internal. This is from our perspective. So it's we're looking at the Dalet Malchios from our perspective, but we're looking at it from with as the four nations are Chayos, are wild animals. And wild animals relate to not just how we suffer, the effect that it has upon us and our Golus, how the entire world is different. When one nation dominates, it's only one nation, there are 70 nations in the world, according to Chazal. How they're broken up is another story. But when one nation dominates and subjugates Klal Yisrael, that has a ripple effect on the entire world. Being that this vision is presented in the form of Chayos, we're focusing on the whole world. In the next parak, when we focus on the Dal Malchios and we look at the Dal Malchios as domesticated animals, we're focusing on the Chorban, the Tzara that Klal Yisrael suffers internally. Forget about the world. Who cares about the world? What's doing it? That's another issue. What's doing locally among Klal Yisrael, among the Jewish people? Where are they? How do they suffer? Very different. It's something which is very subtle, but has a major difference in relating and interpreting what is taking place in these two visions. So again, here we have over here this vision, the four creatures, and we had over here the fourth. I just want to do at least one pasuk. I want to go to the next. Let's go at least one pasuk further. But let's just finish on this pasuk. Here we have the terrible fear of this creature, which is not mentioned by name, which we said is the chazir. And it says now, continuing the pasuk, vishinayin di farzel lo. Rav Levonin has massively strong iron teeth, and the iron refers to this parallels what we've learned in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, where he saw the four Malchios in the form of a statue. The head was gold, the shoulders and the arms were silver, and that referred to Parasumadai. Then the lower portion of the body referred to Yavon, and then came the legs. And the legs were made from two materials, iron, barzel, and clay. And the clay and the barzel did not mix well, as it says there. That came to represent that various nations will try to join the barzel, but will never fully succeed. There will never be a full assimilation between those that will attach itself to the iron, because iron and barzel do not mix. So there was iron, and here again there is iron. That's the shinaim vishnaim, the teeth, the farzel. Lord has teeth of iron, ravravin. Ochlo u madka, eating and crushing. Eating, then ushaara, and whatever remains over after whatever has been eaten and been chewed into little pieces, ushaara, beragla, rafsa, will be trampled upon by the feet of the by the feet of the nation. Now someone learned that this refers to Edom. Now I'm not familiar with the exact. Edom, Edom, we're going to see this in the next pasuk as well, started off as a secular nation. Rome was not the Holy Roman Empire until much later on. What?
It was pagan.
It was a pagan. Pagan nation.
Constantine in the 4th century brought Christianity.
He was pressured.
It was never holy. It wasn't Roman. It wasn't an empire.
An empire, I don't know.
There are three. It accepted Christianity through Yashka and his influence, and eventually they were forced to make the Rome into the Holy Roman Empire, came about much later on. But even when it did accept this, the Holy Roman Empire, there were three major breaks, even going into modern times. Three major, and then you can help me with this. First, there was the break of
East and the West.
The East and the West, the Byzantine Empire.
Right.
So they had a different. Their religion was not exactly the same. I don't know the details. And then, and more recently, what was it, in the 15th century? Right. When another break off, another break off from the religion. So we have over here, really, that's what some of the Mepharshim want to interpret this to mean. And all of this was a vision, almost a prophecy. And that's why there are three different forms. There is Ochla, Umadka, Usha'ora, Biragla, Ravsa. Ochla refers to the original Christians.
Which
middle of Pasuk Zayin. Ochla refers to the original form of Christianity. Umadka refers to the break the East and the West, the Byzantine Empire. And then Usha'ora, Biragla, Ravsa, the influence of the Protestants. Later, what came upon the third major break in Christianity at a later point in time. Some of the Farshim want to read those three different words into this pasuk here. Vehi Mishanya Mina, that's one approach. Now, there's another approach that if you study the Roman Empire, there were three different kufos of who led. Emperor, I don't know the details. Emperors, councils. There was three major shifts in how they governed. Who was in control? Was it a single person? Was it a group of people? Or was it? So that has to be studied in much more detail to understand the origins and the history of the Roman Empire and how exactly they governed. And that can be broken up into three different expressions mentioned here: Ochla, Umadka, Ushara, Baragla. And this creature is different from all of the creatures that were mentioned before. The kar nayin asarla, and it had 10 horns. We discussed this yesterday. The 10 horns. If you learn that, it refers to the Roman Empire. So there were 10. If it's Edom, there were 10 kings in the article. In fact, they actually have 10 Caesars. Julius Caesar was the first, and the last one was Aspasianus. He was the last one whose son. And no, his son Titus. His son Titus was a general. Titus was the 11th. Titus was the 11th. He was not a Caesar at the time when he destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. He was a general. He was the son of Aspasianus, according to some of Farshim. And therefore, the article, Daniel, goes through the actual 10 Caesars, and that refers to the 10 horns. If we are under we interpret this according to Rashi, as Rashi does, that it refers to the 10. This fourth creature, the Chazir, is Edom, and before they would destroy the Beis HaMikdash, there would be 10 Caesars, period. If you learn like the Ibn Ezra, and as the Mitzvus, we read this yesterday, and follows in that approach, that this refers to Yishmael. Rome is included in Yavon, and when we discuss this fourth creature, the Chazir, we are referring to, the Chazir, because the Chazir, if you learn that this refers to Yishmael, so the dynasty of Yishmael was broken up into 10 different groups. It's very difficult to figure out what the 10 different groups of Yishmael. And the Mitzudah says, he tells us what the 10 are.
Regions.
10 regions, okay, 10 regions, okay. It's a lot of speculation. Now let's go to one pasuk. Mishtakal Haves. I looked very carefully Bikar Naya at the horns. Let's do very quickly, then tomorrow we'll pick it up again. Va'alu, and behold, Karen Ochri Ze'era Silkos Beinehon. A small little horn protruded suddenly between the 10. There were 10 horns, and all of a sudden a little horn came forward. Beinehen, usulos min kar naya kad mo yasa is akara. 3 of the previous horns, there were 10 to start with. When this one horn came out, 3 of the original 10 fell off. They disappeared. They were uprooted min kodama before that one. That one comes up. 3 of them were pushed away because of that little horn. Va'alu Ainin, and eyes developed in the tip of this horn number 11, this little horn. Va'alu Ainin, eyes ke Ainei Anosha, like the eyes of human beings. Bekarnoda, in this horn. Ufum Mimalil Ravrivon, and a mouth began to speak with extreme gaiva, great haughty words. Let's see Rashi pasikres. Va'alu kamo va'aru l'shon hine, behold, mimalel rav. And all Rashi here says is in pasikres, I'm reading from Rashi, Rashi just says, it's a very short Rashi. Rashi says, "Malel Ravim Divrei Gaiva Hutitos." So Rashi is following in his opinion that the 10 horns refer to the first 10 Caesars of Rome. First Julius Caesar, the last was who the Gemara calls Aspasianus. He was number 10. Aspasianus had a general. Some understand that this was his son Titus. Titus came into the Beis HaMikdash. And when Titus came to the Beis HaMikdash, he spoke with the ultimate gaiva. We know from the Kinas and Tisha B'Av, he took a knife, he stabbed the parochas, and blood miraculously came out of the parochas, and he said, "I have killed Chaviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I've stabbed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is the blood, the God of the Jewish people." He spoke with extreme gaiva, and that's what this pasuk did. For this 10th horn is a little horn. The reason why it's little, because he was not a Caesar. He was not the leader. He was just a general. So relative to the other 10, he was just a little guy. He was just a little person. Divrei gaiva hu titos she'amar chazal shechirif yigidef nichnas lehechol be'azus panim. Now what does it mean then the three fell away? That's not very clear. Let's just read the mitzudos va'alu, the mitzudos dovin and patsik ches va'aru, v'hine einayim ke'ein adam hoye bekeren zevi af peh medaber devarim gedolim, with arrogant words of nefloim v'hu miramis. This refers again according to the approach of the mitzudos. He's following his opinion that this fourth creature is Yishmael. The neflam of Umram is the Almalchus Yishmael, Hazaka Adlam Oidu, Mashalas Man Rav, Uma Vedes, Beperach, and it caused other nations to suffer with crushing labor. The Karnin Eser Yirmos is Miramis, Kisivshet Malchus Yishmael, Berev Hayishav. It will extend over most of the civilized world, 10 different regions. Uvahem Eser Malchuyos, Adim, 10 mighty kingdoms. The Haim, I do not know what these are. These are Barashan, the Atzpehen, the Chalimin.
There is Saudi Arabia, Yemen.
Isfahan is one of them.
Okay.
Which is in Persia. That's right. The nuclear site there.
Isfahan is the old capital of
Isfahan.
Okay, so these are 10 different regions. Let's just jot down one line. The Keren Zeira, what is this small little horn according to the interpretation of the Mitzudos? The small horn, Yirmoz al Hadavar Ha'osilio Samuch Labia Sagoyel. Kiseitse Am Mizrach, a nation will come from the east. The Soshav L'Saras Yishmoel, it will return to the law of Islam. The Sashchitz Mehem Shalosh Malchios, three kingdoms. The Amelech Meha'om Haba Mimizrach Yechocham V'Novon U'Medaber Niflos Mul Hamokon. I don't know what this means. So maybe there's some commentary where this means that it says according to well, he's going to be cut down. No, Idaber mul means against. He's arrogant against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's going to be some type of war against the Islamic nations. There are going to be 10 regions of Yishmael, and then will come a little horn. This refers to a nation that has nothing to do with Yishmael. All the way will come from the east and will attack Yishmael, will wipe out three of the regions of Yishmael, and will speak with arrogance before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then what's going to happen is this kingdom that will leave after tomorrow will come and be wiped out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will wipe out this kingdom as well. But, okay, this is one approach. I'm just going to give you one last idea. According to Rashi, that learns that we're dealing with Rome, and after we have these 10 horns, we have the 11th, we have Titos, according to Rashi, and this horn develops and has a mouth and speaks with gaiva. Some of the Parshim want to understand that this horn represents the change from the Roman Empire to the Holy Roman Empire, when the Romans accepted officially Christianity as their religion. That's the horn. Because the purpose, that is the horn, and it refers to Yeshu. It refers to Christianity becoming part of their government, and then their battle against the Jew was not just a battle of power. It was a theological battle of religion. It was a Milchemes Das, as it's called in Chazal, a war again of religion, a religious war. That was the Crusades. The Crusades, pretty much. I mean, we know from we know that it wasn't only about religion, but that's what it means. And this now spoke, the koyach of Christianity, or their leaders, was the koyach ha-dibur. There were many debates, all of the chuch of the Ramban, and you study all of the history, there were debates, one after another. Even in the time of the Gemara, there were debates, going back, way, way back, when Christianity first began. And the koyach of this new religion, which was eventually accepted by Rome, and became the flag of Rome, the Holy Roman Empire, and their crusade against the Jewish people, a religious war, it was all armed with the koyach ha-dibur. It was a horn, and the horn had a mouth, and spoke powerful words, and the words came out of the Pope, and the religious leaders, and they debated the Jews, and the Jews always lost, no matter even if they won, and they were then executed. So it wasn't so much a war of might, because the Jews were not much of a, they're not much big warriors.
If it didn't work, then they had the sword, right?
What?
If it didn't work, they had the sword.
But it wasn't, this is another approach to explain what is happening here in this pasuk, what is the significance of this little horn coming forth. A horn is the fight, but the fight was bepeh, a religious war. And this took place at a later point in time. First you had to develop a nation of Rome, which was a pagan nation. Later, it accepted Christianity as its religion. It became the Holy Roman Empire with popes and bishops and so on and so forth. So, and their power was no longer in war. Their power was in the koyach ha-dibur of words against the Jewish people. Okay, we'll stop here.
That happened even earlier. I mean, Paul.
Yes, yes.
Is, you know, he said that Christianity superseded Judaism.
Yes.
And that was the initial debate. That's the basic theology.